This is Brother Peter Diamond, VaticanCatholic.com. In Genesis chapter 22, we read the powerful story of how God told Abraham to sacrifice his only son Isaac. In Genesis 22:1, it says that God tested Abraham. This should remind us that God will test each of his followers at various points in their lives to see if they remain true to his faith, his law, and his commands. By modern standards, the test that God gave to Abraham was a mind-bogglingly difficult one. God told Abraham to kill his beloved son. Yet, upon hearing God's command, Abraham immediately moved to obey it. When God saw that Abraham believed and accepted his word, and that he acted to fulfill it, God intervened to stop Abraham. Abraham is thus an exemplar of true and unhesitating faith, which accepts without delay what God has revealed, even if one doesn't see the justification for it or the reasoning behind it. As St. Anselm says, quote, "For I do not seek to understand that I may believe, but I believe in order to understand. For this also I believe, that unless I believed, I should not understand." End quote. Abraham's example stands out in history for our instruction and admiration. True faith believes first and understands second. It is only when we believe that we are able to truly understand. This principle has a special application to God's truths on salvation. Most people today refuse to believe what God has taught about the destiny of those who die in mortal sin or outside the true faith. Some of them also refuse to believe what God has said about the fewness of the saved, the fact that most people go to hell. See Matthew 7:13. Since these people do not see how individuals they consider to be good could possibly be condemned to hell by a just God, they reject what God has said on this point. They convince themselves that the reality must be other than what God has revealed, and that such people are therefore saved. They are sadly bereft of the gift of faith that was demonstrated so clearly by Abraham. Had Abraham acted in the manner they do, he would have fallen out of God's favor and forfeited God's profound promise. As we read in Genesis 22:17-18, quote, "I will indeed bless you, and I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven, and as the sand which is on the seashore. And your descendants shall possess the gate of their enemies. And by your descendants shall all the nations of the earth bless themselves, because you have obeyed my voice." End quote. The concept of obedience to God's voice that we see here and in many other places in Scripture is not what most typically consider it to be. That is to say, it does not refer to a multiplicity of pious practices that we decide to perform or the amount of effort we might employ for what we deem to be God's cause. No, it captures something more subtle. In many biblical contexts, obeying God or His voice refers specifically and primarily to believing what God has said exactly how He has said it. It refers to a special connection with God's revelation. While that certainly sometimes has application to actions that must be performed or things that must be done, the initial component of the obedience to His word rests with faith in what He has said. If you disbelieve what God has said, you reject Him. If you believe what He has said, you accept Him, and logically you should carry out what He has revealed, although you will not necessarily do so. From complete faith in His word, obedience to His prescriptions should spring. But obedience defined in one's own way, that is, by actions that are allegedly done for God while one disbelieves in some of what God has revealed, is actually not obedience to God at all. It has no value in His sight. A passage which illustrates this truth is 1 Kings 15:22-23 or 1 Samuel 15:22-23. Quote, "And Samuel said, Doth the Lord desire holocausts and victims, and not rather that the voice of the Lord should be obeyed? For obedience is better than sacrifices, and to hearken rather than to offer the fat of rams. Because it is like the sin of witchcraft to rebel, and like the crime of idolatry, to refuse to obey. For as much as thou hast rejected the word of the Lord hath also rejected thee from being king." End quote. King Saul tried to honor the Lord by sacrifices, while he had contravened or ignored his word. As a result, Saul's sacrifices were completely rejected by God, and he was cast off by the Lord. As we see, obedience to his word is better than sacrifices, even sacrifices that are meant to honor the Lord, as King Saul's were, are rejected by God if they are not done in accordance with his word and in faithfulness to it. This passage applies to many false modern, quote, Catholics who deny what God has said on salvation, yet they think they will please God by pious practices or by attending or offering traditional masses. If they reject Catholic dogma and the word of the Lord, and thus true faith in him on salvation, their observance of the traditional mass will not help them. They could attend or offer 1,000 of the most reverent traditional masses, and they will still be completely rejected by God, for they have severed the initial connection to him which comes with faith in his word. That's why the Athanasian Creed and Hebrews 11:6 tell us that without faith, the one true Catholic faith, it's impossible to please God. If we reject faith, we reject God. Faith is what is most lacking in our day. This principle also applies to people who know that based on God's revelation, the modern Vatican II Church and its leaders cannot be considered Catholic. These people recognize that according to Catholic teaching, the Vatican II Church is not Catholic. However, they refuse to believe that God would allow so many people to be deceived. For that reason, they submit to the Vatican II sect or to its leaders, opting to follow their understanding of God's justice rather than what God's revelation leads them to conclude, namely that heretics are outside the church and hold no authority over Catholics. They do not act as Abraham did. By refusing to believe until they understand, they sever the initial connection to God. If they did believe like Abraham, they would then be given the grace to understand how it is not only possible that so many are deceived, but actually just. There's something else that's striking in this chapter. Note that as soon as Abraham stretched out his hand to kill his son, the angel of the Lord intervened, and then something else happened. We read, quote, "But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here I am. He said, Do not stretch out your hand against the lad, and do nothing to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. Then Abraham raised his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in the thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the place of his son. Abraham called the name of that place, The Lord Will Provide, as it is to this day. In the mount of the Lord it will be provided." End quote. Genesis 22:11-14. At the very moment that Abraham obeyed God, God arranged it so that a ram ran up behind him and got caught in a thicket by his horns. The ram would thus serve as an offering in place of his son Isaac, and it arrived at the very moment the angel had finished speaking to Abraham. For that reason, Abraham called the place, "The Lord will provide." This is a striking example of God's providence. If God can arrange it so that a ram arrives at the very instant that Abraham is about to sacrifice his son, can he also arrange it so that a good-willed soul is kept alive until water baptism, which he has said is necessary for salvation? Of course God can and he will. As the First Vatican Council solemnly declared, quote, "Everything that God has brought into being he protects and governs by his providence, which reaches from one end of the earth to the other and orders all things well. All things are open and laid bare before his eyes, even those which will be brought about by the free activity of creatures." End quote. Pope Pius IX, First Vatican Council, 1870. As St. Augustine said, Sermons 391, quote, "When we shall have come into his, God's sight, we shall behold the equity of God's justice. Then no one will say, Why was this man led by God's direction to be baptized, while that man, though he lived properly as a catechumen, was killed in a sudden disaster and was not baptized. Look for rewards and you will find nothing except punishments. End quote. God provided the ram for Abraham, and God will provide water baptism for those who truly desire and deserve it. Lastly, one cannot close a discussion of Genesis 22 without mentioning how Abraham's decision to sacrifice Isaac is a type of God the Father offering his only Son, Jesus Christ, to be sacrificed on the cross for the salvation of the world. In Genesis 22:2, God tells Abraham to offer his only son. Abraham actually had two sons, Isaac and Ishmael, but Ishmael was born to Abraham's handmaid, Hagar, and only Isaac was the child of the promise. There is a special emphasis in Genesis 22 that this son is Abraham's only begotten son. Genesis 22:2, quote, He, God said, Take now your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I will tell you, end quote. This is clearly a type of God the Father offering his son, his only begotten son, Jesus Christ, for mankind. And in Genesis 22:6, we read that Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on his son Isaac's back. Genesis 22:6, quote, Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son, and he took in his hand the fire and the knife, end quote. Since Abraham is a type of God the Father, and Isaac is a type of God the Son, this clearly prefigures the wood of the cross being laid on Jesus Christ as he moved toward the sacrifice of Calvary. Indeed, the wording of Genesis 22:16, which declares that because Abraham did not withhold or spare his son, God blessed him, corresponds to Romans 8:32. In Romans 8:32, it says that God spared not his own son, but delivered him up. In addition, the story of Abraham and Isaac occurred on a mountain, Mount Moriah. Isaac travels up the mountain with the wood on his back, just as Jesus Christ would ascend Mount Calvary carrying the wood of the cross. It's also fascinating that in Genesis 22:7-8, as Abraham and Isaac are going up the mountain, Isaac asks his father where the lamb is that will be used for the offering. Abraham responds by saying that God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering. This is another clear prefigurement of Jesus Christ, the true Lamb God provided for the salvation of the world. This should tell any Jew that Jesus is indeed the Messiah. His crucifixion and redemption of the world were prefigured in God's salvation plan from the beginning.